You're listening to the ISACA podcast. In this CyberPros Exchange Series episode, we're speaking with Frank Downs, director and subject matter expert of ISACA's cybersecurity practice, and Dustin Brewer, manager and cybersecurity product platform developer. In this episode, we're discussing some home devices that are or could be connected to the internet and the security challenges that those devices present. So to begin, can you tell us a little bit about the devices in a home that could be connected to the internet?
Household devices are very similar to computers these days. In fact, most household devices are computers in a lot of different ways. Specifically that they have some type of radio within them, some type of connecting device, whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it's Bluetooth, something is connecting and talking to a server somewhere. Now, this is cool, right? I'll give you a great example. You probably remember those month, day of the week pill containers, right? That had like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They still sell them. You can still get them. However, what's neat is I've got a daily medication that I take, like with vitamins and so forth. And I have different ones I take every day. And with that, the same ones I take every day. I've got a pill cap. It's made by this company called Pillsy, right? That has a Bluetooth connection to my phone that knows when it's been open and closed. So for example, if I haven't opened it yet, it'll send me a notification saying, hey, you haven't taken your meds. If I have already opened it that day, it'll say, hey, look out. And it'll even beep out loud and be like, beep, 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 beep. And be like, hey, don't do this. You've already taken these pills. So it's really super helpful. And it even, you've seen that in the bathroom, and I take a lot of my meds in the kitchen, for example. And if I look in the kitchen, right, there's tons of stuff connected everywhere. And what's awesome is like the kitchen has been really kind of the proving ground for certain things where a lot of people have kind of realized where they do and don't want connectivity. Like case in point, you do have those fridges that everyone talks about that has a level of connectivity and has these big screens on the front, but they haven't been really quick to catch on over the last like 5 and 10 years, right? So the companies have kind of had to alter them and change them in different ways. They used to have little cameras, and I think some of them still do, cameras in the fridge that would try to scan your food when you put it in there and like take pictures and try and guess what you were eating and what you needed more of and less of. They're wildly inaccurate, right? So the kitchen has kind of become this test bed of things that people kind of want and don't want and work and don't work. And they're all over the place. Dustin and I were talking a little bit about sous vide stuff because, for example, you can now connect, if you're cooking something with a sous vide, you can connect directly to your phone or to the Wi-Fi or something like that. And from there, you can, you know, decide what you want to cook and get it to the right temperature. And it presents a lot of like concerns too, based on you're actually working with things at different temperatures and it can be a problem. I mean, Dustin has a really couple really great examples of this. So, you know, I'll let him talk on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, sous vide is a good starting point because we talk about, you know, IoT is there, right? It's here. It's here to stay. It's everywhere. It's in our houses. It's in our industries. You know, we use every day, we use this broad term to describe this network of tiny devices that are all over physically that kind of affect our physical world, right? And sous vide is a great, I think it's like the perfect example to start off with. So, you know, here we go with our cyber in the kitchen, right? So with the sous vide cooker, you have a IoT device that is connected to probably an outlet to power not only the IoT device, but then whatever the heating element is within the sous vide. So basically what you have is the ability to set a timer and a heating element somewhere in your house. And now we have Ecobees and we have Nest and we have the different climate control systems within our houses that are also IoT. There's only so much temperature that you can get out of any one of those things. Like, yeah, you can make it uncomfortable in somebody's house. So the way that sous vide is kind of interesting, though, is that it kind of heats water up to a dangerous point where it can harm something or melt something, or maybe you can even overload the actual heater itself. So I have a sous vide that I use all the time. And of course, being the humongous nerd that I am, I went ahead and actually did a man in the middle attack on my own sous vide cooker. So in other words, I set up a fake AP, a fake access point, because it connects via Wi-Fi. I forced my sous vide to connect to that access point. And then I did packet analysis to see what exactly how the sous vide was talking to whatever server, how it was talking to, you know, to my phone, because I have the application on my phone in order to change the temperature and the time and the cooking time of whatever I'm cooking within the sous vide. So, and I actually, with my sous vide, it was actually fairly secure. It used HTTPS, so it was interesting. You can still kind of do some SSL stripping with that if you really know what you're doing and you want to dive deeper into it. When I actually first started doing this, I guess, this cyber in the kitchen experiment here, I have an appliance that's very similar to a sous vide, and you can actually use it for sous vide, but it actually, the idea of the appliance is to make beer. So for those of you out there who are home brewers, who make your own beer, you know that it can be a very time-consuming process, and it's a very messy process as well. Usually your wife or your husband or your partner gets really mad because the floor in the kitchen gets really sticky because you're spilling, you know, sugar water all over the place, basically. Great company came out, and I think it was actually a Kickstarter, and they said, hey, we're going to create an appliance where you just put all the ingredients in, and it does everything for you. It heats the water up. It, you know, it does the mashing process. It does the draining process. It does the, the hop addition process. And then it'll actually, there's pumps involved with it. So it'll actually pump it into a container where you can do the fermentation on it. Same thing. This thing connects to Wi-Fi. What it actually does is it will go and call back to an external server for recipes. So you can actually create your own recipes with the thing. It's a really neat product. And of course, being the huge nerd that I am, I was like, well, it's really cool that I can do all this stuff, but what else can I do with this thing? So I did the same thing. I set up a man-in-the-middle attack on this particular device. I made it connect to my fake AP, and then I did some Wireshark analysis, and this does not use any kind of encryption. And not only does it not use any kind of encryption, it's 100% in clear text. So I could not only could I see the information traveling from my device in my kitchen to the server, but I could see the response from the server going back to the device in clear text. From there, I was actually able to basically reverse engineer the server and create my own server so I could create my own recipes without having to rely on the server. So in other words, I don't need to order their specific materials for this. I can kind of just control it on my own. Now, from a fun hacking perspective, this looks like a lot of fun, right? Oh, this is great. From a cybersecurity standpoint, it's terrifying because what I basically have in my kitchen is a device that can heat water up past boiling, actually. It actually heats it up past steam, past the steaming temperature of water. I can, it's also connected to different pumps. So if I was able to actually intercept these, and not only that, but it calls back to a server outside of my internal network. So these are packets that are flying across the internet. That's terrifying, right? It's terrifying because I was able to do a man-in-the-middle attack on my end, but there are other man-in-the-middle attacks that you're capable of doing from outside. And this is, you know, where we can kind of tie in the idea of cyber in the kitchen, IoT devices to ICS, to industrial control systems, right? Because what are we really talking about? The difference between IoT and ICS is usually the size of the device or the size of the device is controlling, right? Now, I'm not, you know, these aren't pumps in a nuclear power plant or anything like that, but they are pumps, right? And they use some of the same technologies. And so it's just interesting as a researcher to kind of, you know, as a weekend kitchen researcher, I guess you can call me, to see what these different devices are doing and how they can be affected in our home. And how easy it is to hack into these devices or at least to reverse engineer them and make them do whatever I want them to do. Now, again, I'm a good guy, kind of, right? So I'm not going to blow my own house up, or I'm not going to try to heat this thing up to a temperature that it's not supposed to go to, because I don't want to break the device. It was kind of expensive, number one. And number two, I don't want to cause any destruction anywhere. So, but that, you know, that's not always everybody's intent. So those are my two case studies with it. And it was just really interesting to kind of go in there and see what I could do with it, you know, to see where, you know, how far I could take the cyber hacking capabilities, you know, that I've learned throughout my career and apply them to devices in my own home.
And so a lot of our listeners may not be security experts like you two. What is your advice for a non-expert who's curious about IoT devices, but kind of scared about some of the security and privacy concerns?
I don't suggest us moving backwards. A lot of people I know are afraid, for example, to make their house smart because they're especially with the Amazon Echoes, for example, and the smart speakers, they're always concerned that, you know, they're not going to work right, or they're not listening, or there's going to be a hack. There's going to be issues with any type of technology that you use, right? So I think that if you approach these devices, and at least this is what I do whenever I get any of these devices, with an awareness, that's pretty much the best you can do. So for example, I just got a new camera for my daughter's bedroom because she's, you know, she's a 1 year old and we need a baby monitor. And so I was very careful in which camera I actually selected because there's a couple of things I wanted to consider, right? Has there been a hack? How did the company respond to that hack or that attack? And how regularly is software and firmware updated? And that's the kind of the basic things you can think of when you're going to get a device. Like, for example, with the, we'll use the Suve, right? How can, I mean, this thing can be hacked just like anything else, but has it been hacked? Have there been cases of it? How often, how much engagement does the company do with the actual purchasers? This can really indicate like how invested they are in these products to see, hey, if something happens, we're going to push an update out. I mean, a really, really kind of almost shocking example of this, right, is how much they're actually investing in their time, effort, and commitment in this. It was the example of the airplane with Boeing is kind of a case in point in this instance, right? When they did enough research, they realized that they actually didn't invest that heavily in a robust coding team for actually building these really important security protocols. So the investment, the time, and the commitment really wasn't there. And sadly, it shows, right? Now, in these products, it's very much the same thing. Do they spend time on developing? Are they communicative? Are they responsive? These are things you can consider when you're trying to actually pick a specific device. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we trust computers and we trust systems with just about every aspect of our life. If you're worried about a hacker being able to control the temperature in your house, I'd be more worried about a hacker being able to break into my bank account, right? There's definitely there's a difference here. Whereas, you know, obviously you can lose money and you know, hopefully your bank has some kind of insurance so that if you do get hacked and somebody does steal, you know, money out of your bank account, that's different. A hacker is going to spend way more time on that than they will on being able to turn your lights on and off in your off and on in your home. So, yes, looking into the companies and seeing what they, you know, what they do, like Frank was saying, how they invest their money and how much stock or how much how many resources they put into finding if there are any security holes within their products. And there are a lot of really good companies out there that do a lot of good things, such as bounty programs. So even if someone does hack into an IoT device, usually they're going to turn it in because they want that money, right? They want the bounty. They want the bounty that the company provides. And I think that's, again, it's a good win-win situation for everybody involved. You know, we all put this trust, massive amounts of trust into our daily devices that we use, whether it's our computer, whether it's our smartphone, or whether it's IoT. And I think at some point, we all do realize that we are taking risks with this. And I think, you know, that's where we all do a little bit of a, you know, risk analysis within our own lives and say, is it worth having this in my house to be able to control, you know, for the availability to be able to control my thermostat from anywhere in the world or be able to open up doors from anywhere in the world? Do I want that capability? And I think the answer for most people is yes. So, you know, we're willing to put up with the possible risk of someone being able to, again, turn our lights off and on or at will. And, you know, that's another good way to find out, I guess, if you're susceptible, if your lights start flickering for no reason, then it's time to start looking at your firewall rules in your house.
Definitely. Definitely.
And let's talk a little bit about security by design. In your experience, are most IoT device manufacturers thinking about security when they build their products, or is that still an area that needs improvement?
Yeah, I don't see, with the devices that I've been looking into, I don't see a whole lot of focus on security, especially if it's something that comes off of a Kickstarter or something that's produced in a manufacturing country that focuses mostly on just making as many products as they can as quickly as they can to get them out to sell them so they can make a profit. I don't see a whole lot of these things going through. They go through quality control and quality processes, of course. But I don't see a lot. And this is all anecdotal. I can't speak for every company out there. But I don't see a lot of security testing happening in house. That being said, again, there are these bounty programs that some companies are utilizing in order to maybe, you know, they'll do their own security review, but in order to almost make it so it's an open source type of review. So it's an open source code or hardware review to say, okay, you know, if you find this issue, then we'll pay you for it. And I think that's important. And I think that's something for every single you know, manufacturer out there to consider. You know, what costs you more? Is it a breach in one of your products and, you know, ruining your reputation? Or, you know, a good guy found it, turned it into you guys. You might have paid him $10,000 up front, but it saved you millions on the back end. Frank, what do you think about that?
I agree. I think that we still have a long way to go with the attitude towards bug bounties. And it's kind of understandable because, you know, when these organizations do have them identified, the immediate response can be negative. But if it's viewed as this kind of thing where it's, hey, it's all to help and it's just improving, that's great. And specifically with security by design, on what you just brought up, Safia, security by design is an ideal state and you hope that it is always being implemented. But the reality of the situation is, it's just, I mean, look, it's hard to get, what, 5 different people to show up for, I don't know, some kind of engagement, say lunch or dinner, right? I mean, we all have families and it can be hard just to get everyone together half the time. So when you have a bunch of different people from a bunch of different backgrounds with a bunch of different ideas of what security is, let alone implementing security appropriately, it becomes that ideal state, not the true state. But the more that everyone can work together to try and get to that ideal state, I think the better the devices will be in the long run.
Right. And I think this goes back into another one of those buzz terms that we hear, that we've been hearing more consistently in at least the past 5 years, is creating a culture of cybersecurity within a company. That,
definitely.
You know, that definitely goes into manufacturing as well as creating this culture and hopefully within our own lives as well. You know, again, doing that, we don't think of it as doing a risk analysis on our own personal lives, but we do every day. We say, you know, when you install a new app, you're like, oh, do I want to allow this app to have access to my media on my phone? You know, we all make those choices every day. And I think, you know, in creating this culture of cybersecurity, not only within our work lives, but our personal lives, we get closer and closer every day to reaching that ideal situation.
And how can organizations go about promoting this culture of security, whether that's at work or in their home where they have devices connected to the internet?
Well, first and foremost, take a look at your policy, right? A lot of organizations may actually advocate a security by design without many people knowing about it. It's just a matter of communication. Second, identify what you're supposed, I mean, I don't want to be a policy wonk here, but identify what can be changed within it in order to insist that people do follow it more. Is this going to work at home? No, I don't have any IT policies with my wife. She would be very perturbed if all of a sudden I came in and said, hey, here's the guidance we're following, right? That's not going to go right. I mean, at home, I think it's going to be more of a personal kind of endeavor and communication, right? And I guess you could say that arguably communication is going to be key in the workplace too,
right?
But also compliance.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes down to, and I think we've talked about this before, is this change in human behavior that we have to create, right? Which is not an easy task whatsoever. It's changing the, oh, hey, look, there's a link, click on it. You know, oh, there's an email, open it. Of course, that's what we want to do. Emails are supposed to be read. Links are meant to be clicked on. That's not always how, it doesn't always end up being the right, you know, sending you to the right.
Not always the best plan.
Yeah, not always the best plan to just do those things. And so we have, you know, and we have these different behaviors that we all do on a day-to-day basis. We hear, you know, a notification on our phone and we're, you know, instantaneously like pulling our phone out of our pocket, looking at it and trying to open up the link or trying to open up whatever. It's really, really hard to do. And it's not something that we expect to happen overnight. But again, creating this culture of cybersecurity and creating, you know, obviously good policies, having those good policies, and then also enforcing those policies is a big part of that. And then also making the policy so it's not, maybe not so black and white or not so abstract. Making it so it is something that somebody can easily read, figure out, and change their behavior with.
And is there anything else you'd like to add for our listeners?
Don't let the fear of these types of attacks keep you from putting it in, right?
Yeah. Sous vide steak is amazing. So don't let that just scare you from ever using a sous vide machine.
Great foods await.
That's right. Yeah. It is a bit of a trade-off, you know, knowing that your ISP is hopefully doing some kind of defense system, you know, intrusion detection system or something, you know, on your particular IP address or on your particular device. You know, you can look into it, make sure, you know, check out Spectrum or Comcast or whoever your internet service provider is and make sure and see what they're doing on their end. And then, of course, just, you know, being smart about it on your end as well, making sure that your Wi-Fi password is strong enough. You're using the best, you know, encryption you can with Wi-Fi. WPA2, I think, out there right now is the best we can hope for in our homes. Of course, there's enterprise and Radius and all that other stuff that we can use in our enterprises. And just making sure that you're being smart about it and you're taking all the precautions you can.
Thanks, Frank and Dustin. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. But if you enjoyed this episode and would like to continue hearing the monthly podcast with Frank and Dustin, be sure to subscribe to the iSOCA podcast and leave us a rating on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts.